You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to episode 418 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Poliachi Pizza. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
Hello.
Home of the
petition to, while they are in first place, we say it is home of your first place Seattle Mariners.
I mean, that would have to be when I'm recording in Seattle, because Renton is not the home.
I see. For you, that's the petition.
If the Sounders go on a hot streak,
then we can say Washington.
Now that they are the home
future
of the
home of the
the Sonics.
Yeah.
Miss that. Still have that T-shirt. I'm pretty sure.
418. Is that DJ Hackett?
Sounds right.
Okay.
Weirdly. MLB season of record.
Uh-huh.
Dave Meggett is the first 18.
Oh, there we go.
Did you see the Alex Mayer game-winning stat on Monday night about Ryan Bliss?
Oh, that it was the one-run game in their first game. We're number one in a one-run win
in their major league debut
since Brian Turang.
Yes.
With the Mariners or any team?
I believe that was with any.
Happened to be two Mariners.
I got to double check the stat.
This is going
to
be the most that anybody has ever talked about Ryan Bliss before or after this podcast.
No, people are very. Have you not seen the tweet?
What's the tweet? Oh, about how he wanted to play for the Mariners 10 years ago.
Yeah, yes.
That's what I'm saying. Like, this is the moment.
It is the first Mariners player, which is less exciting.
He's still looking for hit.
But he had run.
He did have run.
He had game winning run. Look, we'll always have.
Okay, when you're in Seattle, while the Mariners are in first place. Can we petition?
All right.
There we go.
We can do it.
Yeah, we've petitioned.
As long as the storm, good. You petitioned to me. I was successfully petitioned. As long as the storm don't take first place. What's a bit of a sad podcast this week? Because like the rest of the world, we were remembering the late Bill Walton, who died Monday at age 71 after a battle with cancer. Someone who was inextricably tied to the Pac-12. The Conference of Champions, as he's so loved to declare throughout his broadcasts, and somehow tragically fitting that he passes away days after the final Pac-12 championship was held, the baseball tournament over the weekend won by Arizona. This is somebody who was a huge part of, you know, Pac-12 basketball during some of the Huskies' greatest periods. Of NBA basketball when the Sonics were at their zenith in the 90s and NBA and NBC has been, even though we don't remember him as a player whatsoever, was a part of our lives for three decades.
Absolutely.
And like, obviously everyone gets tributes after they pass away, but the breadth and outpouring of love from all sorts of different places, from his broadcasting career, from his playing career, everyone who interacted with Bill Walton seemed to come away happier for the experience.
I mean, that's kind of all you can do in life, right?
I mean, a legacy.
I feel like Bill Walton, more than anybody, there's so many reasons why I should have disliked Bill Walton. And just kind of like archetype of so many different things that I'm not a fan of, right? He's so like baby boomer, right? The Grateful Dead, all of these things, everything that I hate personally. He never played in Seattle, right? He played in Portland. He was a UCLA fixture. These were all of our rivals. And yet still, this is how you know you're dealing with somebody amazing. Still fucking love Bill Walton.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's weird because like as an NBA broadcaster, I don't think we loved Walton during the 90s, but he wasn't like, we clearly weren't getting his full personality based on what we saw when he started broadcasting, you know, college basketball in particular.
The basketball Pac-12 after dark, when you get Bill Walton on like a Thursday night, right? 7 o'clock, that man loved the Pac-12 more than anybody, the Pac-10 before it, more than anybody, and then the Pac-8 before that. But he was a fixture of West Coast basketball.
Unclear where he stood on the AIAW.
And broadcasting as well. Just every time he was on the broadcast, you're like, we're getting freaking, this is the Pac-12 network, right? And you're like, all of a sudden, I'm getting Bill Walton announcing this game. It was a rare joy in the Pac-12 network era to have Bill Walton. In fact, I'm going to go out there and say this. Bill Walton was the best thing that ever happened in the Pac-12 network era.
I the Pac-12 network, despite the issues that created in terms of financials and some of the distribution, like, had many talented people working for it full time without question. Walton's association was just, it embiggened the entire conference. You mentioned he never played in Seattle. It's odd. Like, sadly, the worst moment of his NBA career came against Seattle, because that's where he re-injured his foot in the 1978 playoffs. And the two cities in the Northwest remember that very differently. It was a turning point moment where the Blazers, who had won the 77 championship and were 50-12 before Walton got hurt in 78, he never plays for them again. Sonics go to the finals that year for the first of two consecutive years. The high point also of Pacific Northwest basketball, I would say.
Yeah.
So, again, I think certainly, you know, reading all these tributes, like, the more we can be like Bill Walton, the better. So, a terrific legacy. All right, moving on this week. Congratulations to Sue Bird and Megan Rapinoe, who are named the Grand Marshals of this year's Seattle Pride Parade on June 30th, celebrating the 50th anniversary of the original Seattle Pride Parade in 1974.
All right.
Yeah. Congrats to possible future home.
No.
Of Baby Fantasy Juice. Oh, you're saying no? No. With Seattle High School.
Cambridge did great. They won games in the... Cambridge was awesome in this.
Okay.
I personally do not give a congrats to West Seattle High School. Oh. You can. It's your home territory. They're rivals to me.
Wow. Okay. You're uncongratting.
Uncongratting. I'm acknowledging.
Congrats to West Seattle High School on winning the state 3A baseball championship Saturday at Gisa Stadium in Pasco. All right, and then we have this to wrap up this section. It's sort of a listener email, but submitted through the Discord from the listener Griffin Pullman, who was
referencing...
What did I say, Pullman?
You said Pullman, like he was on the Palouse.
No. Griffin Pullium.
Pullium.
That's a tongue twister, unfortunately. Referencing a podcast from 5 years ago that prompted him
I was like, was this pre-pandemic?
Oh, yeah.
It was, because in the clip, you're like, let's get back to some old sports.
Was I?
I think you said that, and I was like, at first, I mean, I saw the date and saw that it was pre-pandemic, but I was like, was this straight up pandemic times? It wasn't. I think we just, pre-pandemic, were also talking about some old sports.
I mean, it's always fun to remember some sports.
It's kind of a thing we do.
I was explaining earlier tonight, because I referenced the Rick Pitino, Larry Bird, and Kevin McHale, and Robert Parrish aren't walking through that door speech, and then I was explaining... my old ESPN colleague, Amin Alhassan's Pitino game after teams get eliminated. And they realized, oh, this was just Let's Remember Some Guys.
Yeah.
This was just a creative name for Let's Remember
Some Guys. The Pitino game was like, you have won a really good game after your coach gets fired?
No. The idea is you say, insert random player X is not walking through the door.
Okay, I see. Oh, it's like a game that you play.
Yeah, it's on Twitter.
And you're like, Brian Turing ain't walking through that door.
That would be the equivalent, yes.
Mackie Sasser ain't walking through that door, stuff like that.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I understand.
Take Megan in. Wow. This had a. I'm going back to the notes from this podcast.
I think you have every note saved.
The NHL Seattle group gave us a date for the groundbreaking
training
facility.
Can't wait.
I'm trying to see what the old sports were we were talking about.
It's actually really funny.
You know what podcast this was?
What was it?
Sue Bird undergoing knee surgery.
Oh, wow.
This was the podcast where I declared
that Sue Bird's career was over.
Yeah.
Wow.
Before she won a championship, literal championship.
I can't believe it was such a famous podcast.
Wow.
That's kind of incredible. It's funny. I was thinking about when we had Ryan Clark on for so many times leading up, which never again. We're just like, we're done. The Kraken are here now. I will no longer appreciate them. Thank you. But we had Ryan Clark on so many times and he was talking about hockey terms. And now I know all the hockey terms. No, I'm like, they're 27 of 28 in the penalty kill right now.
You're Rangers fans?
Yes.
Fandom, I should say.
I literally am just like earlier today, I was paying attention to so many sports, right? And the number one sport that I was paying attention to was hockey.
Wow.
Over the Mariners, over the NBA playoffs.
My ranking was number one, obviously, NBA playoffs. Number two, Storm. Number three tie between Caitlin Clark and Mariners because they didn't.
Oh yeah, see, the thing is about the Storm, I never know when they're on.
So you need me to post like a at here store at channel the Storm game starting or something.
Well,
like that.
I don't get those notifications. You just need to chat me and okay. be like the Storm are playing because I always find
Thursday
out that they're playing.
They're playing Caitlin again, by the way.
I did see that.
4 p.m. Pacific time.
But yeah, hockey was the number one choice of all of those. Storm didn't register on because I didn't know it was happening until after. I just got to know. I think I saw infrared on Instagram. It was like Storm win. And I'm like, oh, great. It's better than seeing a Storm lose.
Your fellow Rangers fan.
It's true. Yeah, we have mutual shared interests. But I also, we can have an NBA talk for 1 second. I told a friend of mine, even I was like, the Wolves were down 2-0. He's a Timberwolves fan. He has your Finchy slides. And
no, they're Nas Reed slides, aren't they?
No, they're Finchy slides. Okay. It's a Nas Reed bucket hat. But it says, I heart Nas Reed.
It's outstanding.
The slides are Finchy. And I was like, even when they went down 2-0, and I was like, I think the Wolves could go down 3-0. And I still will think they're going to win that series.
That's a take.
Has that happened? Conference finals? The Warriors, were they down 3-0?
No team in NBA history has come down from 3-0. It's 0-155.
In any playoffs?
Any best of seven series.
Okay, so I'm predicting. Yeah. Literally the first time ever.
I mean, I wrote a piece a few years
ago.
No
team in NBA history has come back from 3-0?
No, I mean, it's only happened a couple of times in your beloved hockey.
Wow.
Where there's even more randomness from game to game.
I'm also very, because even if the Rangers had won that game 3-1, I still would have been terrified. Because the Panthers look way better.
Oof.
But wow. We've got Shesterkin, we're good.
There's your hockey talk. No, we have some hockey Kraken stuff on this week.
No, we actually have a lot of Kraken conversation.
I mean, I suppose.
I had an interesting thought about the Kraken hiring. Okay. But not right now. That'll come. Yeah. But it's okay. I'm boldly predicting a thing that has never happened.
I did write a piece in 2022 saying, look, eventually this is going to happen.
Of course.
It's the NBA's equivalent of 16-1 in college basketball, which went, you know, 33 years, I think, without happening, something like that, and then happened two times in like 5 years.
I get that the cumulative effect of having to win three games in a row now is very difficult, but the Timberwolves probably will be favored in two of those games.
Probably. I mean, part of the reason that 3-0 doesn't happen typically
is because usually it's the road team,
correct,
or the lower seeded team who goes down 3-0.
Correct. The last higher seed to get swept was the Portland Trailblazers against New Orleans in 2018.
No, I remember that. That was horrible.
It was. They got better shots that entire series. It was one of the all-time make or miss league series, and I could not convince anyone of it in the moment. And then
well,
the
did
next
they go
year,
to the conference finals? Yeah.
And it was the worst thing that ever happened to him.
You say that all the time, but there's a reality. Nothing good was going to happen to the Blazers. Like, you're like, it was the worst thing that happened, and they made all these wrong moves, or whatever. They still were going to not go to the play. Like, there still is a world that there was the Warriors, and there was LeBron, and all of these other people. None of them were going to be playing for the Blazers, no matter what moves they made.
I don't recall the Warriors or LeBron going to the 2021 finals.
Who, the Suns went?
Yeah.
But I'm just saying,
the Blazers could have filled that vacuum if they had traded CJ earlier.
And then they would have just lost to the Bucks, and you would have been like, that was the worst thing that ever happened to them.
Well, no, because by that point it would have been evident.
If all you do is think in long-term perspectives, everything is always going to be the worst thing that ever happened to you.
I mean, it worked out. They got those Milwaukee picks are looking super tasty.
But at the same time, are they going to win? Most teams don't win championships.
That's correct.
So you're just like, Pacers going to the Eastern Conference Finals, the worst thing that ever happened to them. They probably weren't going to win a championship either way, no matter what they do, good or bad.
But
this
offseason, they wouldn't be as upset about not winning a championship.
Fine.
That's the point.
It's the, so
expectations
it's
are the worst thing.
Emotional balance that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Can we all just, let's just be happy with the thing that happened?
We're not all Bill Walton, so we can't. I mean, I would be happy to take that perspective, but the rest of the world, again, just...
Look, me, I would take that perspective all the time. You literally only write about how every team does things wrong all the time because they're not thinking about long-term perspective.
Yeah.
So you're not happy to
see
take
how
that
well that's worked out.
Seems like it's worked out pretty fine for you.
No, I mean, yes, but I'm saying at this particular moment, as the Dallas Mavericks are one game away from the NBA Finals.
Because you roasted the Kyrie trade?
and the PJ Washington
But then if they lose the finals, won't you do the same thing?
This is the worst thing that ever
happened.
Exactly.
They're going to get swept. The Celtics are the only team that could win the championship at this point. That is it. The list of teams who can win the championship is one.
No, that's not true.
You don't agree with that?
No, I mean, I think they're the clear favorites. I have a piece tomorrow about the Celtics.
The clear favorites.
I mean, they're only minus 220.
They had the best point differential in the league.
You did?
Like, they're the best team by far.
I agree, but the best team doesn't always win.
And the team who set it up, you can trace it all the way back this championship right there to those Portland Trailblazers. Can't you?
Because of the Jrue Holiday.
They got Jrue Holiday because of Dame Lillard right now. So you can trace it all back to 2000 and that series you were talking about.
2018, yes. All right. Anybody else?
This is all came actually because you mispronounced Griffin Pulliam's last name.
I mean, I don't know that Pullman led us the detour. Okay, so he was asking in this email, what was, quote, the Puget Sound Basketball League incident? And I'm shocked we haven't told the story on the pod.
I think we have. It was not that bad of an incident. It was just we were playing a game. I think we were shorthanded.
Yeah, we were. We had six guys, maybe seven.
And Katie. No.
Including Katie. In there.
I like that you said it. You called it guys.
I should not have gendered it.
And I think it was a really hot afternoon that we were playing. Our team was awful.
It was an early evening. I want to say we were clearly up north.
North Seattle. Yeah. It was like one of those situations where you're just like, I just do not want to deal with this right now to go get our ass kicked at basketball.
I mean, we were actually competitive. Our team won no games. We were the worst team probably in Puget Sound Basketball League history, I would say.
No, I'm not history. I'm sure there are plenty of other teams who didn't win games.
Okay, we were in the lowest division and won no games.
We had one game, you weren't there, where we like lost by six.
This game, we were somewhat competitive.
We were somewhat competitive.
I remember it is like one of the great performances of my life. Which means I scored like 10 points, maybe.
I mean, that's a lot of points for you.
It is.
And so the only incident was that...
The only incident?
Well, the incident... was I think I'd gotten a turnover and then a person was, I might have thrown a bad pass or maybe there was somebody else made a turnover. I don't remember. And then the other person was, they were driving down to the other end of the court, going up for a layup. And I kind of just pushed them instead of like they were jumping up for the layup and I just pushed them rather than defending the shot or just letting it happen. And then the ref came over and was like, you need to just take a break. It wasn't like I was ejected or anything.
It was unclear whether you were going to be allowed to play again. So I think we had six, and then we were down to five. Like, we could not sub at all.
And nobody look, our endurance was not great.
Oh, no. No.
I question why we decided to join this basketball league.
I also question it.
But you know what? That's the thing.
But this was part of your Rec Sports era, where you had never won a Rec Sports game in your life.
I think I eventually did, yes. But the thing is, it's funny now, because I was like, it was a horrible driving up there. It was really hot. It was just gross. We were getting our ass kicked. Now I would be so excited to have any opportunity to go get my ass kicked at basketball. Right?
I mean, I would be excited to like not to feel physically up to playing basketball.
We were
worth the risk at least.
So that was the only incident. It wasn't actually that bad, but I think we all made amends after. I had much, much worse incidents in basketball. When we played at the Y, things were grisly when we played at the Y.
I actually, when I first read it, I thought it was going to be referring for some reason to the Ballard sheet metal game, which you weren't a part of.
I had nothing to do. I had no baseball fights. Were you a spectator? I think I was. You got into a fight at a Ballard sheet metal game?
I didn't. It was other members of the team. We had like joked that Ballard sheet metal was our rivals.
But also, Ballard sheet metal is going to kick your ass. Seattle Storm.
This is the Sonics, for the record. The Storm softball, we crushed everybody.
They were really good?
Three-time champions.
There we go.
All 3 years I played.
But still, my money was on Ballard. Not necessarily in baseball, but my money was on Ballard sheet metal.
Baseball would have been a different
story.
They
were sheet metal workers.
They were very good.
You worked at a basketball team not playing basketball.
I mean...
And they were sheet metal workers.
You would think we would be athletic. We did have a guy who played baseball at UW on our team.
I think you probably were athletic, but again, there's athletic and then there's working in sheet metal.
But softball isn't about athleticism. It's about hitting them where they ain't, and they were very good at it.
Ballard sheet metal was?
Yes.
And that made some people angry. When we played, this was also Storm or Sonics basketball at the Y. that I just ran. I would literally leave from my actual job and go play basketball with you at the Y.
Yeah, I was thinking about that the other day because I was downtown and I was like, I remember this.
I braved parking there too. That's the crazy. The craziest part about it is that I found parking.
I agree. That is.
But there was one time where there was a person who like, they were up by like 20 or we were up and it was like the last minute and he boxed me out like until I fell over or whatever. And I was just like, got up in his face after it was, and then there was like a little skirmish between everybody. And I think we apologized after, but like that, it was like, in hindsight, I was still right.
I think I remember my coworker George getting into it with someone.
He was the one who came over.
Oh, okay.
Because like we got in each other's faces, then he came over. Which honestly, kudos to him. Because the thing is, you got to protect your dogs no matter what.
I wasn't gonna do it.
No, I know you weren't gonna do it.
Not for you.
That's why George, who I have not thought about or seen in a decade, he's a real one. Still to this day.
Shouts to George.
We're not shouting to you. That's why you only got one vote in the MVP voting. Right there. But me, any situation, right or wrong, I'm always there to protect my dogs, and you know that.
Well, especially now that your dogs are 7 years old.
No matter what age they are.
No courses, Carter, this week, right?
No. I mean, they were off for Memorial Day anyway.
Oh, okay.
But this season, I'll tell you about the championship game, though.
Is it scheduled?
There's this weekend's game is the two undefeated teams.
Oh, okay.
So I think that's like the unofficial Super Bowl.
The de facto.
There's this thing called BizTown that the children go to. Uh-huh. I hate everything about it, of course. It's all pro-capitalism. But I went and I had to go to BizTown last year. And there are a couple of kids who Luca was like, Tyler remembers you from BizTown and says, what's up? And I was like, those are my dogs right there. No matter what. Even if they're kids who are randomly assigned to, you're like, Sahib, you're my dog forever. He's my dog for life, Sahib. That's how you coach. Thank you. And that's how you stick up for your teammates. And that's how you get more than a single Peltoncast MVP vote.
Well, thanks for the lecture. Should we get
Let's talk about cookies.
Our search for, well, we're not technically searching for Seattle's best cookie this week because we're talking about instead a national franchise that has recently come not just to the Seattle area, home of the first place Seattle Mariners, but specifically
there we go.
To Fairwood, Washington.
It's not in Fairwood.
It's
in Benson.
I saw that they listed it as Renton. Is that officially Renton?
No. Yeah, that's definitely not Fairwood.
Okay. Is it Cascade? Or do I just not know where this location is? It's right by the, is it by the Fred Meyer?
It's right across the street from the Fred Meyer.
Okay.
Fairwood starts like the Safeway. Like 140 is Fairwood.
Yeah, I thought it was over in this.
Yeah, we're unincorporated over here. Don't call it Renton. Thank you.
Okay. Well, Crave Cookies.
We're unincorporated and proud of it because nowhere I live can ever be incorporated.
It is absolutely true. They describe themselves on their website as New York style cookies, but
I have no idea what that means.
Someone compared them to Levain Bakery, which is the one you went to, right?
I guess I could kind
of
see it.
Sort of, in terms of the thickness. But the more natural comparison is to the more familiar chain, Crumble Cookies, to the point that Crumble sued Crave and another competitor for trademark infringement, which was jokingly described by the other competitor that was sued, Dirty Dough, is the, quote, Utah Cookie Wars, because they're all headquartered in the state of Utah. Ground zero.
I thought Crave was from Texas. Maybe they're from Texas, but
I feel like they're making it very difficult to find out where they're from. But they are from Utah.
Kevin deleted disparaging comments about the state of Utah because you know he's in the pocket of Big Utah. It has been known for a long time. Thank you.
I believe it's known as Big Gobert.
Big Gobert.
Big defensive stops down the stretch tonight. Nobody talking about it.
Anyway, Utah's great.
So this is now your closest cookies, I would say.
I mean, we might be talking about my closest cookies, but
Yes. Okay, your closest potentially starred cookies.
But like a cookie chain of some kind.
A place that specializes in cookies.
Yeah, I would say it is. Your closest cookies is a hilarious thing. That only in a search for Seattle's best cookies.
You always need to know closest cookies.
Hey guy, what's the closest cookies around here?
I'd have to do, you know, the driving time. Like geographically, I'm probably closest to something in downtown Seattle. But
really? Over Bering?
Driving time, I might be.
I guess there are no West Seattle cookies.
Not yet.
Wow, okay. It's kind of strange that there isn't, though.
cookie desert.
Yeah.
We had all sorts of donuts, but very few cookies.
Too many donuts. Cupcakes. You got everything.
So what are your thoughts?
So I'd been to Crave before.
Yes.
And I guess my first thought on Crave is I'd been in there. There's one in Covington.
You're talking about Crumble now, right?
Or yeah, Crave. I've been to Crumble before. Crumble is the originator or whatever.
Yes.
And so there's one in Covington. I'd been to it. I'm just like, I see this place. I have to go in there, right? It's right near the dollar store. And I went in there for the first time ever like 3 years ago or something. I think it was pandemic times. And the thing that I was struck by was just how sterile it is inside of there. It is the least inviting environment I think I've ever been in my entire life.
It feels very franchised.
Oh, it is deeply franchised.
Like everything about it is designed to be replicated in, you know, office parks and strip malls across this,
but it's also
across this great country of ours.
It's Mod Pizza was designed to be franchised, but it has a flair.
It has an aesthetic.
Yeah, an aesthetic, right? There's the whole mod thing, right? You get it. Like, you know, it's like the Who, stuff like that, modifications on the pizza. Yes. There's a bunch of stuff everywhere. Crumble has none of that. Crumble is like, can we make a eerie white building and also have four styles of cookies in it where you just see a single cookie on the counter and the rest of them are weirdly in the back? It is a very awkward experience going into one of those places.
I don't know if I would go so far as to say call it awkward.
I had and I never once have been back. I went there. I was like, these cookies are like a solid D or whatever.
I think they're better than that.
They're fine. They're hard to rank because you're like, I just ate a cookie and it was fine.
I never would not enjoy a cookie from Crumble.
Because to me, I always think of them as like post specialties, you know? But specialties had, I don't even know where the fuck specialties, like what that was, where it came from.
But I want to say the Bay Area was the home for specialties. But yeah, I mean, especially like the smell of those cookies coming freshly out of the oven.
It was great.
Yeah.
But like I enjoyed being in there. It was inviting. But the cookies still are kind of similar. Like apples to apples a little bit, because these are meant to be served warm. You're supposed to have Crumble cookies and Crave cookies warm. That's kind of like the thing, right? Is that they come into the, even on the box for Crave cookies, it has instructions for reheating them. Mm-hmm. And so the Crave opened down the street and I was like, fuck this shit. I was like, I'm not going anywhere near that place. I don't like anything about it.
Wow.
Because of how jaded I was about Crumble. Also, you know, I'm a hometown cookie purist. And one day I was fiending for a cookie and I was like, well, I know where the closest cookies are. And so
yeah, you've been clocking exactly where the closest cookies are.
I mean, I do drive by there a lot. So I just kind of randomly was like, all right, screw it. I'm going to order these cookies. This is like 3 weeks ago. And I went in there, picked them up, and I actually kind of liked the cookies.
Oh, wow.
Quite a bit. No lie. Like, so I thought that they were pretty solid overall. And to me, the thing is they have new different varieties each week or whatever. And so the first week that I went, I was like looking at the menu because I didn't know anything about it. And I was like, I got something called crookie.
Oh, the crookie. The croissant slash cookie.
A croissant slash cookie, which I had never had before. And
we talked about the crookie on the pod at some point, didn't we?
No, we talked about it offline because you were aware of it. Yeah, and I was eating that. And I was just like, your scientists were so preoccupied with whether or not they could. They didn't stop to think if they should. But after that, I had the chocolate chip cookie. And I have to say, all of the different variations, to me, the like special types of cookies are kind of just fine. They're maybe a little bit too much. And I think the thing that I've learned from this search and also from just consuming a lot of cookies is that I think I just like a cookie more than I want a bunch of bells and whistles on it. And the chocolate chip cookie at Crave is shockingly good. Warm, cold, whatever the situation is. I was like, this is actually not, it wouldn't be a competitor for Seattle's best cookie, but it is a place I have been back to since then.
What I would say was interesting, having Crave for the first time, and I think this was a little bit different than my Crumble experiences, although I'm pretty sure I've had their plain chocolate chip.
Probably got lobotomized when you went in there. Sterilized. Like, it's just a creepy place to go in. It seems like you're in a dentist's office or something.
Just antiseptic.
Yeah. No, very antiseptic, yes. Maybe that was good for pandemic times when I went in there. Yeah. It's like, these things seem really, really clean.
They're like, everyone is standing but way far apart.
I also feel like I might get murdered with fucking Phil Collins playing. Like,
but I would say that my first impression of the Crave chocolate chip cookie is that it reminded me a little bit, because it was actually thicker. Some of their cookies are like Treat in particular, which I think Treat share owes a lot to this Utah kind of tradition of cookies.
It all comes back to Utah with you, doesn't it?
And the number of flavors, the rotating flavors.
Eating these cookies made me kind of be like, maybe Treat ain't that special. But Treat does it very well.
I think they're doing it in a much more intimate, personalized way. You go into Treat cookies, it does not feel antiseptic.
Totally agree.
So it's very welcoming.
And they just do a better job. They're more creative about it.
Correct. But one thing that was interesting, I had a blueberry Pop-Tart was one of the specials from this week from Crave. And I've had that exact donut or that exact cookie at Treat. And I thought the Treat one was clearly superior, for the record.
Okay.
But the chocolate chip, it was, so many of them are kind of volcanic shaped, as we've talked about.
Yes.
Including in particular the Red Velvet Oreo, which I think was my favorite of the ones I had today.
I'm all about the chocolate chip.
The chocolate chip was not. It was kind of thicker on the edges than it was in the center. And I would say that what it reminded me of more than any other thing is like the cookie that they serve you in a skillet.
Okay.
Is a dessert at like a sit-down restaurant.
I mean, those are always pretty good.
Those are always quite good. It does feel like we talked about with the Costco.
Yeah.
Like there's a bit of a cheat to just serving it warm and that element of it. Yes. That.
But I had it cold the first time I had it.
But especially like the ones in a skillet, like contrast that with the cold of the ice cream.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard to go wrong with that. Like no. You don't need a lot of skill.
Totally agree.
So that's what it kind of reminded me of, I would say. So I would say this was very solid, but I thought the flavors were quite good. I thought it was a little more dense than I wanted. And maybe that's because I didn't reheat it at all.
Interesting. I mean, a good cookie should be good. The cookie that, I mean, we're obviously not judging this. This is like a national cookie conversation. This is the biggest trend in cookies nationally right now.
I mean, clearly. And everyone's trying to get in on it.
And so understanding where cookies are coming from at a national level is also an important thing to look at locally. And to me, I think the most important thing about eating these cookies is Hello Robin is clearly better. Treat does a similar thing and is way better. Chicorina is way better, right?
Yeah, I mean...
And so it's kind of nice to be like, confidently, I know that the local cookies, like if I had in front of me Hello Robin or these Crave cookies, it's not even a choice. It's correct. Not a conversation. And the thing that I love about, like, say a Hello Robin is it's a consistent menu, more or less. They might have very small rotating things.
They do have one seasonal, yeah.
But you more or less know what you're going to get, and they have perfected that rather than there's coming down from the corporate office or whatever some sort of idea for something, you know? Like, I actually, in this one scenario, don't need that much variation in my life.
Okay.
Which is why we should talk about cookies that have been more or less the same since we were children and
more or
probably
less.
Before.
Have they changed?
I don't think they have at all, and that is cookies from Safeway.
Which is actually the closest cookies to you, yes, but not a cookie-specific location. I feel like we always do Safeway at some point in one of these searches.
That's the best thing about Safeway. We always have a version of it. They didn't have like ramen, probably, but...
Nah, we never did the Safeway teriyaki.
Oh, I love... Yeah, we definitely did. No, we talked about Safeway teriyaki.
We talked about...
We did Panda Express teriyaki.
Yeah.
Maybe we didn't do Safeway because we were... I love Safeway teriyaki too. I think I love teriyaki in basically every form, except when it is from a city that is not Seattle.
100%.
And when a person who lives in Los Angeles, even if they are moved from Seattle, tries to make teriyaki, somehow it is awful. Wow. I don't know.
All right, but Safeway cookies.
You can
cookies.
Have beautiful weather, but you can't have teriyaki. Safeway cookies. A mainstay. A fixture, right?
I feel like, as with everything else, the Safeway cookies define replacement level for cookies.
I mean, the best thing about it, right, they come in the, like, plastic tin, and there's probably, like, 20 cookies in there, and base price is $5. I end up getting two of them because there was a digital deal to get them like for $3.50, and then also is buy one get one free, and I'm like, fuck it, I'm gonna get two things of these cookies for $3.50. like, how do I not? That is the price of all of those cookies that are in my kitchen, are the exact price, or maybe even less than a single cookie from Crave.
Oh, less. Consider it as $5 a piece at Crave.
So I'm just like, bring it on. They've always been the same. The ones with the M&Ms in them to me are like the most fixture Safeway cookie. Like, you see it, that the vision of those, their chocolate chip M&M, that is engraved into your soul. Even if you haven't had them that many times, but you go to like Petrovitsky Park and there's a big family having a cookout or whatever, they always got those cookies. Always. It is such a fixture of those types of events.
What if they have parties. The Costco cookies?
They might have the Costco, which are similar.
Costco cookies are
not
thicker.
Not the Costco cookie. Correct. Costco cookies in Correct. The plastic box.
The Costco bakery cookies.
Yes.
Those are thicker and I would say a little drier. The Safeway cookies are not that dry, all things considered.
I gotta say, quality-wise, pretty solid.
They're thoroughly adequate.
But they're not. I would rather have a Safeway cookie than I would have a Chips Ahoy cookie.
I mean, one of the interesting things that just popped into my head is I think for most people, the cookies that they've had most in their life were probably homemade. And you certainly cook a lot of cookies uh-huh. around here. But Jan was not baking us cookies on a regular basis.
I don't think I remember Jan baking a single cookie.
I'm sure she must have, but I agree that I cannot remember it.
Don't mention this to her. She'll get mad for the insinuation.
So I feel like Safeway was particularly important to us as a cookie tastemaker from that standpoint. And like our grandparents, delightful cooks, both of our grandmothers were, not the biggest like traditional chocolate chip cookie people that I remember.
No.
So, yeah, Safeway was there for us.
I agree. Also, we found out from Randy, you can sometimes go to the bakery and just ask for a cookie if you're
a kid.
That
was a huge development. We learned that.
But again, as a cookie, like, it's the exact size that you want. You can have two or three of them. It was pretty moist. It was pretty soft. That's the thing that I don't like about boxed cookies is I always want a soft cookie. Not too soft, but I want a soft cookie. And that's what Safeway does really well. Like, it is the right, it's baked pretty much the right way. It's not exceptional, but for the price point, like, I would rather have that probably than maybe even Crave.
Wow. Well, there you go.
Also, I don't know what they're called, but there's the cookies. Oh, God, what are they called? These are not like in chocolate chip cookie territory, but they're like, oh my God, I used to remember what these were. They're like a like really soft sugar cookie in like a trapezoid shape, and then there's a dollop of fudge on top.
Oh yeah.
Those things are fucking lit. Like I will have times where it's just like if it's a me day or whatever. A me day might be described as I have to wake up as early as 7 a.m. or something. But like maybe I podcasted too late.
Oh no.
If it's a me day, I might go to the store. Oh God, they're called, I'm going to remember this, and it's going to be you're going to be talking at the Kraken or the Sounders.
Apparently you're going to be talking about the Kraken,
but I will go and I'll eat just the fudge top of those and leave most of the bottom of the cookie. I'll eat the entire box in one sitting. They're incredible.
You might want to check with your doctor about that.
Might want to check with your mom about that.
Mom's in Vegas right now. We'll see how many different fast food chains that exist in Seattle she can go to within a single trip.
I told her to go to Roy Choice. Did you hear about that?
No.
I was like, you have to go to Roy Choice, best friend.
Do you think she would like it?
I think every person on the face of the earth would like it. She's not undiscerning.
I'm not saying she's undiscerning, but her only concern is whether things are expensive or not.
I told her that I thought you could do Roy Choice for not that high of a price point.
You probably can, I agree. Especially, you know, she's not housing as much food as when I went with Nate Duncan.
I like the idea of Jan and Nate Duncan going together, though.
What a conversation that would be. Maybe it's Jan at Roy Choice while Nate and Danny are passing a basketball back and forth. Shouts to David. All right, should we get to your favorite segment?
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariner's hot takes coming at you.
Let's just have some fun with it. The Mariners sitting three games up in the AL West after Memorial Day. The shit doesn't happen that often. And we are full on in the dregs of the baseball season. This is truly the most fun time to watch baseball because things start to get real weird. Brian Wu's the best pitcher on the planet? Sure. Call up some guy named Ryan Bliss who'll be a fun afterthought in 5 years? Or 3 years, realistically? Let's get it! Sit all alone in center field? My favorite seats are the ones with no one else around for a mile. Baseball seasons aren't actually made in October. They're made in late May. Just on in the background. Or you tap in for a few innings, watch the ninth. Whatever you want, man. The stakes aren't that high. It's May. And it's even better when it happens against the Astros. Go win a game because of an infield single and make a week-long memory. Push the Stros further into oblivion where they belong. This year, we can do it with the subtle confidence of being in first. Let's have fun with it. Every time we talk about the Mariners, let's call them your first place Seattle Mariners. The situation is great because these games don't matter that much, but you also know they're worth keeping on, and you're not in danger of it not mattering when it matters.
I guess that makes sense. That checks out. I'd forgotten this was a four-game series. I was excited the Mariners had won the series, but they have only assured themselves a split, which, like, in and of itself would be not bad because it's just that much less chance for the Astros to make up ground against them if they split this series. But obviously, if they win the series, it's a huge, huge plus in keeping the Astros at bay.
I'm not afraid of the Astros.
Oh, okay. Are you afraid of the Rangers?
I'm not afraid of anybody. This is your first place, Seattle Mariners. Thank you.
65% to make the playoffs now at FanGraphs after tonight.
Really? Just adjust? That was like 5%. This one win?
Yeah.
You might want to regress your opinion in the mean, FanGraphs.
I mean, it counts both ways, though. 55% to win the division. Creeping up to 14% to clinch a bye, which would be nice. So... yeah, things are happening for the Mariners. I don't know if you're aware of this. Julio Rodriguez hit two home runs in the same series.
Wow.
Last weekend. So that was a fun development. Has not had that kind of power in this homestand, but has been on base regularly. It's been nice.
I think Julio, I did the Julio's back take a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I think Julio might be back. He's hitting the ball hard. He's finding ways to get on base. He's stealing bases and he's hitting with power.
And he's getting caught stealing.
Did he get caught? I didn't even see that. That's the thing.
Not today, but he was trying to advance and got thrown out.
Oh, I see. I don't know. I saw
a lot of outs on the base paths for Julio lately.
Luke Rayleigh made a catch over the fence, right?
He did. Yeah.
It's just like, I didn't see that. That's fine.
That was better than fine.
No, it's great. No, it's awesome that it happened, but that's why this is the best part of the year.
Because it's fine that you didn't see
it. Yeah,
it.
It's fine. It's not like they're like every game.
I went to go work in the basement in the bottom of the seventh and was like, oh, I'll be back for the end of this game. Or maybe it was the top of the seventh. I don't know, something like that. And I'm like, I'll be back. And then I got back and it's like, hey, here's Ryan Bliss getting interviewed about scoring the game-winning run.
Great. I'm telling you, that's
I'll take it.
Because you're not going to beat yourself up about it. That's what this time of year is all about. They're just playing baseball.
So Bliss is up because Jorge Polanco was placed on the IL with the hamstring injury that he returned briefly from, but... then re-injured. So, not ideal, but what are you going to do?
I think we will like Jorge Polanco more having been without Jorge Polanco, if that makes sense. This will always define how we feel about Jorge Polanco, which is, like, after we don't have him, are we going to think to ourselves, oh, it's kind of nice to have Jorge Polanco back? Or are we going to be like, you know what, Ryan Bliss was pretty good.
I think it depends. I mean, Ryan Bliss has played these first two games. They're probably going to continue playing him against lefties because Scott Service is like very against the idea of playing Josh Rojas against lefties and Luke Rayleigh for that matter. Although they had bringing them off the benches pitch hitters on Monday. It was kind of nice. Today it seemed like more just getting Dylan Moore a day off after playing a lot of games at a lot of different positions. But I think Dylan Moore will be playing a lot of second, or Rojas will be at second and somebody will be at third. You know, whatever the mix is. Will not be Luis Urias at third for the foreseeable future after he got sent down to AAA.
Sent down? Yeah, you didn't see that.
Wow. He went down he to was make like, room for Jonathan Class A.
Literally for a while, he was the off-season move.
Life comes at you fast. No, it's all about Luke Rayleigh. we're hitching the whole thing to Luke Rayleigh.
I actually think Mitch Garver is going to end up by the end of the season having like a pretty good stat line.
He has hit much better lately.
It is kind of incredible, though, how you could just, like, you could go through a season and you think one thing's going to happen and something completely different happens. And you could be like, that's, like, I mean, the Jesse Winker trade, right? We were just like, Jesse Winker is who they wanted. Geno is the throw-in.
Yep.
And we see Jesse Winker this last week, our old friend Jesse Winker. And you're just like, oh, God, that guy.
Look, just, hey, Jesse Winker still saved that. Double led birds. To the Mariners' first playoff appearance ever directly.
Mariners legend Jesse Winker for that one moment.
Winker wore 16 in Seattle, right?
What?
Am I remembering correctly that he wore 16?
Jesse Winker?
Yeah.
I don't. Why? Because you're wondering about the meeting notes?
Because no, because at some point we're going to like be like, it's the Jesse Winker and it's the podcast.
What's enough I don't time think you passed? Can ever feel about Jesse Winker the way that you feel about Dave Meghan.
I mean, I agree with that. Look, Jesse Winker wasn't immortalized in Little Big League.
Yeah.
Where it's inexplicably, it's like the Mariners that are in the movie are Griffey, Pinella,
Randy Johnson,
Dave Meghan.
Yeah, Jesse Winker.
He was 27 in Seattle. So
Mateo broke his arm and... That's why his football season is over. And I was like, we all agree we hope he comes back with a little big league type situation, right? If he's not throwing at least 100 next week, I'm going to be furious.
Can you imagine Tay in the major leagues?
He'll finally get his parents back together, I think. So what happened? What's the guy's name? Like Timothy Busman or something?
No, that's Little Big League. You're confusing Little Big
They're
League.
They're all the same
year.
Movie.
They're not.
There were how many angels in the outfield?
We've talked about this. Little Big League, like ahead of its time, sabermetrically.
Sorry, I'm talking about a rookie of the year type situation. Yes.
Yes, yes, that's the difference. Tay will not be managing any teams. I feel like Lucas.
Maybe. We'll see.
Okay, you're not ruling it out. Are you.
Luis Urias got sent down.
Is our dad the wealthy heir to the owner of the Seattle Mariners?
Is that guy's name? Timothy Busman, is that his
Busfield.
Name? Busfield.
Busfield. Okay. 30-something, I believe. It's a little before our time. We were not 30-something.
He was definitely for our generation. He was like that guy. He was that guy.
Yes. Seattle Kraken.
Hello.
Have a new head coach.
There we go.
As I sort of expected, based on the candidates we talked about last week, it's Dan Bylsma, who will continue coaching Coachella Valley in the Calder Cup playoffs before... taking over the Kraken at the end of that job. We talked about this. He won a Stanley Cup with Pittsburgh way back in 2009. Not have a ton of success as an NHL head coach after that, but he's been a part of the organization, has developed a lot of the young players they consider their future. And I think it speaks towards a development focus for this organization over the next couple of years, which is probably the right way to approach things.
But also they've just been successful
at
Coachella Valley. And I think there's a reality of it's not... If you can win one place, I don't think it's just about development. I think it's that if you can win one place, you're still playing against competition for your level. It's not like he's like an NHL manager. Therefore, it's easy for him to win at Coachella Valley.
I mean, I think there's a case that the development matters more because the ability is somewhat probably less equal at the minor league level than it is at the major league, at the NHL level.
I think there's also a case that we don't know if coaching matters at all.
Exactly. This is my point.
My favorite thing about the Dan Bylsma hire is there's also chatter about him hiring Jessica Campbell,
who is currently his assistant coach at Coachella Valley, one of them.
Which would be the first female coach of any kind in the NHL.
I have not done the research on that.
Which
it's also possible she could get promoted to replace Bylsma at Coachella Valley.
What's a better job? You know hockey.
Well, so here's the scuttle that I heard last week.
Okay, I can't wait for this.
Is that Bylsma didn't want to take the Kraken job because he preferred to stay at Coachella Valley.
He was like bullied into it.
I mean, that was my position. It was like, well,
bro, me too. I guess. Have you seen what it's like? Did you live through Memorial Day? Go back, Dan Bylsma.
Memorial Day was quite nice. It was Friday that was pretty ugly.
Saturday, yeah. Sunday, Memorial Day weekend. Nice to you was like still pretty shitty, but the clouds were high.
No, it got up to 70 at the end of the day. I would say I was at a picnic. It was lovely.
All right, fine.
In Ording, of all places.
Oh, God. I do not approve of that.
Well.
Ording. That's really funny. So you're saying that maybe the real question isn't whether the head coach job at Coachella Valley is better than assistant coach job with the Kraken. It's whether the head coach job at Coachella Valley is better than the head coach at the Kraken.
I assume there's also a job security element to that, but like I'm like, I get your life priorities, Dan Bylsma. So I
love the idea of them just like endlessly talking him into it.
Or being like, hey, we're going to fire you at Coachella Valley.
Yeah, it's like we also we got power over you here too. Anyway, I think it would be cool if Jessica Campbell got the job.
Yeah.
She also is 31 years old, which makes me furious. just because of how much younger she is than me.
Yes, I think we understood
that. And hypothetically successful. But also, my favorite part about it is we have been following this Coachella Valley playoff run so closely.
I mean, I think other people have been following it more closely than we have.
Have they?
We have been, we've been following it as closely as we have the Kraken season.
That there's this Coachella Valley playoff run and that they might end up with the coaches from Coachella Valley as the coaches, as head coach and assistant coach of the Kraken.
It is a wonderful coincidence.
It's like a Jake Haner type situation where we've just been following this thing from afar,
but yes,
or whatever. We've just been following this thing from afar, and it might enter into the forefront of our lives.
Yeah, there we go.
Is in the newser, was it like Bylsma preferred to stay at Coachella Valley, but was bullied by the Kraken organization into taking its head coaching job?
The newser does focus on Jessica Campbell's possible candidacy as the biggest news that came out of the press conference introducing Bylsma today. But he had to get immediately back to Coachella Valley because they've got a game on Wednesday night, game one of the Western Conference final. As part of the Calder Cup playoffs against the top seed from the Central Division, the hated Milwaukee Admirals.
Oh my, not the Admirals.
I know. I like the.
What does Milwaukee and Admirals have to, how did they end up with that name?
I don't know.
Okay. Do you think they just wanted to have a generic name so that they could move them at any time?
It is possible that could have been the result of a past move, I suppose. I mean, I don't know. Maybe there's some sort of tradition there. There's water and, you know.
There's water?
There's a lake there.
Fair enough.
Maybe there's Admiral. I don't know.
Anyway. Oh, God, the logo, too. Just a pathetic organization, the Admirals.
They were renamed the Admirals in 1971 after their first season.
What were they before then?
The Milwaukee Wings.
Yeah, that it's still, I guess that's an upgrade. I thought it was going to be
something.
Here we go.
Here's the actual story. It's even dumber than you would you guessed. One of the investors, Irwin G.J. Murar, owned an appliance store, and the name was renamed the Admirals after a brand of household appliances sold in Murar's store.
Wow.
Currently marketed by Whirlpool and sold exclusively at the Home Depot.
There you go. I knew we'd be here.
This is like when we learned about the rugby thing.
What a pathetic thing to be named after, Milwaukee Admirals. Not like the Coachella Valley Firehawks?
Firebirds.
Firebirds?
Firebirds.
Yeah.
Of which we are lifelong fans.
Oh, absolutely.
So we'll be following the series, obviously, even more closely to see what
Dan Bylsma comes. Because it's our hated rivals. Yes. Even more closely, despite the Admirals of Milwaukee.
All right, Seattle Sounders, another thriller in the U.S. Open Cup as they reached the quarterfinal stage. They conceded a penalty in first half stoppage time, went down 1-0 at Starfire last Wednesday night, I should say. But Alex Roldan equalized from the spot after a handball in the 68th minute. The game looked headed for extra time before UW product Kalani Kosa-Rienzi scored his first goal for the Sounders in the 88th minute.
Is he Italian?
I don't believe so.
Probably Hawaiian. His name is Kalani.
I do not think that either.
We're claiming him.
Okay. It ends in a vowel. It certainly could be.
Both last names end in vowels.
That's true.
That's 100%
Italian. They're all vowels.
Yeah, there we go.
They will advance to take on Sacramento Republic. Another USL side. They'll be traveling to Sacramento to face them in the quarterfinals.
Is that the team that would have hypothetically moved up to MLS?
Correct.
Okay.
Sacramento Republic was like created to be an MLS team, and then just were like, no, we're good. So
they weren't like, we're good. They got like held out because of like financial issues. They didn't choose not. We literally went through this last week.
This last week.
we're good.
All right, I've not yet found anything on his ethnicity.
It's
his
done. Heritage. We've already claimed him. He's Italian.
All right, Sanders then made it a two-win week traveling to St. Louis on Saturday night to face the MLS side, St. Louis City SC. They forced the city own goal to open the score in the 66th minute, doubled it through Jordan Morris 3 minutes later, allowing them to survive a St. Louis goal in the 82nd minute with full points. City had a whopping 24 shots, 5 on goal, but Stefan Fry largely stood
there
tall.
There we go. It's a Shesterkin-like performance.
And the Sounders are now in playoff position at 9th overall before hosting Real Salt Lake this Wednesday.
Wow.
St. Louis still has a match in hand and leads on points per match, but still an incredible rise up the standings for the Sounders, given where they were in the season's first month.
Two wins.
It's true. Real Salt Lake continues to lead the West. Only Inter Miami has a better goal differential this season. RSL beat the Sounders 2-0 at home in Sandy earlier this season, where there surely were a lot of cookie franchises. Pedro de la Vega, questionable. Your favorite, Pedro de la Vega, questionable to play after not traveling with the Sounders to St. Louis as part of his rehab process.
I pulled up EAFC, not called FIFA anymore.
Yes, that is correct.
That's the end of the story. I pulled up.
It was a beginning to that story, but there was not a middle and there was not an end.
I pulled up EAFC on the PlayStation 5. And first off, the career mode is just literally hasn't evolved at all in like 2 decades.
Mm-hmm.
It's all that I want to do is have a really good manager mode in FIFA or EAFC, whatever it's called. It's just like, it shouldn't be that hard. And there's a cap on how many years you can play it. So I think it's only 30 years that you can play it. And if you're a person like me who wants to grind on it, I want it to be hundreds of years of being able to play it. That's my complaint number one.
Okay.
My comment number two is that I went to MLS and I was like, let me just check here. Let me just make sure that St. Louis is a team. And I confirmed they are in there. They are a club in the game. So...
okay.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you have fact checked that one.
Straight to Juventus, but we were back in the game by the way.
Oh, that's right. Because what were they previously?
They were, oh my God. I was going to say Bergamo Calcio, but that's a different club.
It was like Torino FC or something?
No, it was the region that Juventus is in. I can't remember what it's called. I didn't consider starting in MLS. I didn't really think too hard about it, but I did check beforehand.
Okay. I'm glad you did.
Are you looking up what they were?
I was. Okay. I have not yet found it. Seattle Reign FC gave up 3 first half goals Friday in DC, clawed back a goal through Veronica Lotzko in the 50th minute and saw Emery Adames score in stoppage time.
Oh yeah. Piemonte Calcio. Oh, it's yeah. That's the region. Yeah. That...
but still suffered their 3rd consecutive loss. Good news is the Reign can't lose this weekend due to an international break.
There we go.
All right, Seattle Storm. Since we last talked, they have won 3 consecutive games starting last Wednesday by beating Caitlin Clark in the Indiana Fever.
We haven't talked since then?
We have not.
On the podcast, we've talked.
Yes, we have. That is true. They crushed the Washington Mystics at home on Saturday, then went on the road and beat the Chicago Sky Tuesday night. A little shaky down the stretch, but had it all the way. They still have not beat anyone that I projected to make the playoffs going into this season. All 4 of their wins are just, or I guess Indiana I did have projected, but they do not look like a playoff team right now. All 4 of their wins are against 3 teams that have won a combined... I guess Chicago's won 2 games, but they've won a combined 3 games total this season.
I'm here to say none of that matters.
It's all fine.
And I think most importantly is, A, you need to beat those teams.
Correct.
B, the way that they've been winning, like the victory over the Mystics, right? It was like a 40-point victory or something.
I don't remember what the final was, but it was a lot.
The way that they've been beating these teams has been the way that the Storm that we expected to see preseason should be winning these games. It took them a second. It was so funny that we talked last week and you were like, I've basically readjusted my perspective about where they rank, which might still be true. But they kind of, from the second we talked, became the Storm again. And that victory over Indiana, the way that they held on, they played such a good game in front of that large crowd. I thought that was an awesome victory. And it really felt to me like, okay, the Storm team is back. And then they've had the breakout games from Skylar Diggins-Smith. Gumeke is looking good. Jewel Lloyd looks good. Like, they look like the team that we expected to see again. And I think, I mean, you tell me where you would, where your perspective is of them now. Maybe the rest of the WNBA has gotten better. There's other teams that have moved into those spots. But it feels to me like the Storm are kind of back in about the place that we expected them to be.
Well, one of the things that has continued that we, that all, it makes me feel both better about the Storm but worse about where they're going to finish in the standings is Minnesota Lynx might just be awesome. They're 4-1 with the best point differential in the league. Crushed the Liberty at home on CBS on Saturday.
I kind of like anytime anybody beats the Liberty or the Aces. Anybody beats the Liberty or the Aces who aren't the Liberty or the Aces, I'm a fan of that.
It feels a lot more wide open than last season thus far. The Liberty have lost twice. The Aces are 3-1 but have played all four games at home and, you know, mostly against relatively weak competition.
How did that happen?
Schedule computer spit that out.
That's very strange.
They're on the road this week.
The schedule computer spit that out.
That's what it does. Connecticut is the lone remaining undefeated team at 6-0. They're plus 10 per points per game. So if you think that Connecticut and Minnesota are going to be in the top four along with Vegas and the Liberty, it's getting kind of hard for the Storm to climb up and have home court advantage in the first round of the playoffs, which would be a challenge. But
it's a longer season, right? We're talking
40 games.
60 games. Okay. 40 game season, though. And it's been 2 weeks.
It's not like because of the fact that the difference is insurmountable. It's just like Minnesota and Connecticut have looked so good. And those were teams that I had projected a little bit ahead of the Storm coming into it.
Okay.
So you combine them playing that well with them already having a better projection, I do feel better about their chances. I would, if we're doing WNBA power rankings right now, I would have the Storm fifth.
Okay. That's fine. If they're fifth, but the top of the league isn't as dominant as it was last year.
For sure.
That's still a better place to be in than third with two teams that can't be beat.
Yeah, I guess that's true. That's a fair point. I mean, I think getting to the semifinals would be like a really nice season for them. But because the one thing, if you're fifth, you're not guaranteed a home game.
You would probably claim it was the worst thing that ever happened.
In the WNBA, you can just make over your roster like this. We just saw it.
I mean, they're probably going to, but...
It's going to be harder for them because all these other teams are starting to build practice facilities. Like, that edge isn't going to last forever, but yeah. And, like, everyone in the league is going to be a free agent in 2026 because the cap is going to go way up with the new CBA and the new TV deal. So it's going to be a total free-for-all then. Storm now have the second longest winning streak in the WNBA at 3 games.
There we go. But so they're basically, if you would have... preseason seen them at this point with the 3 losses that they have right now,
yeah,
you'd probably be like, that's maybe a loss worse than I expected, but that's fine
given the schedule. I would say yes, that you would have probably expected them to split against Minnesota and their other results to be more or less what they have been.
So it's kind of like where they're at right now I think is a perfect place to be, and it also means that they're within striking distance of hosting a playoff series. Like, this is fine right now.
Without question. So you mentioned Jewel Lloyd looking like herself. She had 32 points, 10 rebounds, or 11 rebounds? 11 rebounds and 6 assists against the Fever in her best game of the season. Breanna Stewart, the only other player in Storm franchise history to go for 30, 10, and 5 in a game. Skylar Diggins-Smith really struggled in that Indiana game, actually did not finish the game at point guard. It was Sammy Whitcomb out there down the stretch, which was interesting, kind of unremarked upon because there was so much going on with
it was Jewel remarked upon in this household.
With Jewel Lloyd's game.
We saw Sammy out there.
Sammy was terrific. And then Nika Mule's debut, as we'll talk about in a second here. But then she came back and had 16 points, 9 assists, 1 turnover, 6 of 9 from the field to lead that win
She'll
over Washington.
She didn't play at all last year, right?
She did not, no.
It's like, literally, we're judging her based upon her, like, fourth basketball game in a year.
Yeah, she's still getting her legs under her. And it was in their relative homecomings, Jewel Lloyd and Skylar Diggins-Smith leading the way against Chicago. They combined for 40 points. Jewel didn't shoot the ball particularly well in this one, 6 of 18, but Diggins-Smith was 7 of 12, 2 of 4 from 3, her highest scoring game of the season, although not the assists. Ezi Magbegor, Neko Gumeke have both been rock solid all season in the front court. Getting some solid play from Victoria Vivians thus far, locking down that fifth starting spot. So, yeah. yeah, things are trending well. Storm's still only 10th in offense, but up to 3rd in defensive rating. So Nika Mule, after we recorded last week,
this is coming.
We discovered that her visa had at long last been approved.
I knew that was coming too, but
and she shows up to Wednesday night's game, her WNBA debut against Caitlin Clark, wearing a visa approved T-shirt. Incredible power move. Checked in, got the loudest ovation of the night.
It was like kind of crazy.
Louder than Caitlin Clark, louder than Jewel Lloyd, louder than Neko Okoboke, Skylar Diggins-Smith, whoever. People love Nika Mule, and I get it. Like, I talked to her after the game. It was the first time I've interviewed her, and she's just a joyous personality. I mean, there's like some Bill Walton qualities, I think, to her personality, and you know how much she brightens everyone's day. Has fallen out of the rotation, did not see any action on Wednesday night, so we'll see. They didn't use Kiana Williams either. It was Sammy Whitcomb exclusively at backup point guard for the Storm in Chicago, and she didn't even play that much. Skylar Diggins-Smith played 35 minutes in this game, Jewel Lloyd 38. So we'll see if that continues. It kind of has to in some ways to get Sammy Whitcomb the minutes she needs.
Well, I mean, where was Nika Mule drafted?
14th in the second round, yeah.
It was just like... the
people's love for Nika Mule has the expectations for her play a little high.
I mean, 14th sounds absurd to be like, it's like a deep draft pick, but that is the situation.
When there's 12 teams.
And also, like, Caitlin Clark is having a hard time adjusting as a point guard to the WNBA.
Did you see Caitlin's line tonight, though?
Was it good?
Yeah.
Is she back?
They lost, but it was...
I mean, I'm excited for Thursday to play them again. I want to play a good Caitlin Clark.
Caitlin Clark had 30 points, 7 of 16, 13 of 15 from the free throw line, 6 assists, 5 rebounds.
Oh, they played the Sparks again?
3 steals, 3 blocks. Did again have 7 turnovers.
The turnovers, they'll get cleaned up. I watched the previous game against the Sparks.
Yeah, that was their first and only win of the season. Leah Boston played really well in that one. She had a good stat line tonight. She did not look super great in the part of this game that I watched, I would say.
I mean, the good thing about a player like Nika Mule, though, is having personalities that people are fans of, everybody is a fan of in the league, even if they're not the stars, I think is important for the league, right? Because there's players in the NBA where it's like, these aren't star players, but people just love them as players. And that's, I feel like the WNBA has been missing quite a bit. And so having those extra little bits, even the just like...
Alicia Clark, I mean, she's a very good player, not a star. She's a personality like that, I think, for the W.
The swag of coming in, it's all important. I'm out there watching random WNBA games. I literally am just like turning on Ion. And then whatever comes on Ion after, it's very dark.
Is it?
No, I don't know if it's dark. You're just like, what the fuck? It was like the only situation where I was like, man, I wish I was watching the Ryan Ruland-Smith live podcast show or whatever. I was like, I finally found something that I like less. You're deleting that too?
Yes.
For the country of Australia?
I turned on the Storm game earlier tonight on Fox 13 Plus and discovered that Leah Remini is hosting a game show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there you go.
Then, fair enough.
Yeah, so you never know what you're going to find out tuning into the WNBA. But also, by the way, Nika Mule, after the whole like shutting down Caitlin Clark in the Final Four thing, checked in her debut against her, and Caitlin Clark immediately goes step back, behind the back dribble, step back three on her. And then scored 5 points and had an assist in 3 possessions. So that happened.
Yeah, it happens.
Well, something else that happened. A lot of players submitting notifications of transfer from the UW softball team after their elimination in the first weekend of the NCAA tournament. So both returning pitchers with eligibility, Ruby Malin, who was their ace this season, and Sydney Peters. Star shortstop Riley Holtorf. Slugger Alana Johnson. Starting infielder Kinsley Fiedler. And part-time starter Olivia Johnson, the 6 players thus far who have submitted notification of transfer, a huge blow to UW softball for next season, unless some of these players have a dramatic change of heart.
Or, I mean, they can't go in the portal and pick up other players?
They can, yeah, but it's going to be hard to get better players than these.
Why?
I mean, that's a great question, and... You know, I don't know if any of these players will talk about it, but I hope that journalists who this is their beat are looking into it, because sometimes this can be an indicator of something going wrong in a program. Sometimes it's just a personal choice. I think the biggest question I have is, like, did the season end the way it did because players were unhappy enough that they were willing to transfer, or are they transferring because they're unhappy with how the season ended?
I would strongly guess that this is coming from within, and people are unhappy with coaching at the UW softball program, because the way that the season ended, they did not meet expectations. And When a team doesn't meet expectations as a team overall, not a random individual, but a team overall, especially as the season goes on, if they get worse and worse and worse, that usually to me is a sign that there's a problem with the coach. Now, you would never fire a coach ever, of course, but...
Well, I mean, Heather Tarr is the, like, she won the championship. Like,
it's been a while, but...
I mean, they were in the Final Four last year, or no. in the World's Women's College World Series last year, weren't they?
They went to the Final Four. They went to the championship, like, 2000...
I believe that was 19.
19. The program is not necessarily trending in the right direction.
I mean...
I have no idea what the transition to the Big Ten means for softball. I think that's something that we'll find out. And maybe that's a factor.
So the Big Ten softball has not been as good historically in the Big Ten. It's long travel, obviously, and to a lot of cold weather locations in a sport you're playing outdoors in the spring. It's not ideal. None of it seems ideal. But I don't know if that's the issue. I mean, we're not seeing the same thing UCLA is, I believe, still playing. I think they made it the Women's College World Series.
But if all these players transfer to SEC schools, then I guess I kind of get it. But even competition for Oklahoma is about to get higher. Like, the competition for everybody is going to be higher as the conferences are consolidated, right?
Yep.
Oklahoma is not going to be able to run away with national championships when they're playing in the SEC. It's just going to be different.
I mean, they still get to host the...
They get to host it, but the level of competition around them, just the day in, day out, they're going to have to play harder teams throughout. There are teams that care about softball in the SEC.
Yeah.
To me, this is still, with the way that the season ended and that many players transferring, I would be very surprised if there isn't. And maybe it was just this class. Maybe something went wrong with this class or whatever.
It could also be personalities within the locker room. It doesn't necessarily have to be from the coach, but
it's not a good portent. I know.
And one thing I will say about everyone, you know, this podcast listenership feels the way about transfers probably differently than much of college sports.
Heather Tarr's only 49, so she's not that old. She's just been the coach for a very long time. There was a particular heyday for the UW softball team in the, like, 2000. I mean, they won in 2010, right?
And I think you're just... Like, this is a very UW sports fan perspective, that they should stay, like, one of the eight best teams in the country at all times.
They've kind of been that, though.
Yeah, but that's... But other teams are spending a lot more on softball, is what I'm telling you. It's, like, very similar to the Sounders in MLS. Like, it was cool that you had so many more fans in 2009. You still have the most fans, but your ratio of your fans...
Do they have more fans than Miami?
I mean, probably, because I don't think their stadium is as big. Do they?
Yeah. Okay.
Do they play at a soccer specific? But like those tickets are way more expensive, I'm sure. LAFC's tickets are way more expensive. Like, all of a sudden, you might still be on top, but the ratio between you and everyone else is different. And I think that same thing is true in terms of softball spending.
There's probably a reality here that maybe none of this matters. Maybe this is all noise. Maybe we're overreacting and players transfer because players transfer all the time. You're two starting pitchers. Leaving is definitely not a good sign. And the chances of them ending up either in the SEC are very high, or rivals. These players might transfer to UCLA.
Yeah.
USC doesn't play softball, is that right?
They do not.
Okay.
UCLA and Stanford were the two Pac-12 teams to make the Women's College World Series, which starts this weekend.
That's kind of crazy. That's actually a huge down year for the Pac-12.
Well, for all you're saying about the Big 12 and the competition that Oklahoma's about to face in the SEC, there were more Big 12 teams in the tournament than SEC teams, although obviously one of them was also Texas. So
I'm saying
it's the four teams that are four of them will be in the SEC next year.
On an overall season-to-season basis, SEC softball is going to be stronger. SEC everything's going to be stronger than Big 12 everything.
I mean, probably. They've got a lot of money.
They've got a lot of money, and they have a lot of the teams who can invest. Because the thing is, when you invest in all these other sports, it kind of opens up the resources to also invest in softball. The SEC wants to win at everything. They don't want to just be like, we're good. We're good not winning this thing. That's not a reality.
But they're not winning as many championships as the Conference of Champions once did.
That's great.
All right, one transfer coming to UW on the football squad. That's Northern Colorado quarterback Shea Kuykendall, who is giving the Huskies a third scholarship QB after announcing his transfer. The former three-star recruit started three games at the FCS level last year as a redshirt freshman, replacing injured former Husky Jacob Sermon for the final three games of an 0-11 season for Northern Colorado. Did outperform Sermon with a 64% completion rate, just 5.6 yards per attempt. I mean, this is more about depth than it is, you know, Kuykendall really, I think, having a path to playing quarterback meaningfully at UW. So, on that note,
thanks for listening.
Thanks.